Hey everybody, Steve Maxwell here again. This is the fourth in our podcast series, and today's date is December 15th of 2013. And for this one, I want to start the first of several podcasts that I want to sort of dedicate to people that were influential in terms of me developing a love and a knowledge for vintage drums specifically. And it seems only fitting then to start that by talking about the person who, in my opinion, was, let's say, the guy, the vintage drum guru, the person who is responsible for influencing so many people like myself and many, many others. He's the guy to blame for our addiction to vintage drums. And that person is Charlie Donnelly. And Charlie is, he's no longer with us. He passed on a number of years ago. But Charlie was a guy that I first met in the 70s, right around 1974, when I was traveling, starting to travel on the road in a band just after I got married. And there was a person who was a singer in our band, came from Connecticut, just outside of Newington, Connecticut. And I was talking to her one day about how much I loved vintage drums. Now, this is 1974, so there wasn't a big vintage market then. Most of the stuff that was around was just old drums. But I had a big, real big passion for vintage drums, just loved them. And she said to me one day, she said, you know, there's this old guy, and old guy at the time, he was younger than I am now, but at the time I was just a young guy in my early 20s. And she said, there's this guy in Connecticut, lives near me, and he's got this little tiny shop, and he's got all these old drums in it. And I said, give me his name, give me his phone number, I got to go see the guy. So I drive down, when I'm in Rhode Island, I drive a couple hours to Newington, Connecticut, and I meet Charlie Donnelly. And what you have to think about, when you think about the year 1974, this is back in the time when there was no internet, obviously. There were no cell phones, there were no laptops, you know, it was like the Stone Age in terms of technology. There were no really no books about vintage drums because it hadn't really become a big deal at that point in time. It was still in its infancy. So anything that you learned, back then you learned it from people, other people who shared what they knew, and then you passed it down. And that was important. So I get out to meet Charlie and I start finding out things about incredible stuff that I'd always kind of wondered about but never had a chance to see. If you didn't have an old drum catalog, and we didn't have many of those and they weren't a big deal back then, if you didn't have old drum catalogs, you know, you wouldn't really be able to learn about these things. We all had catalogs back then from the 60s because that's the stuff we looked at when we were buying drums when we were in middle school and high school, and that was the stuff we looked at. But anything beyond that, we really didn't have much of it, so we didn't know much about it. Guys like Charlie were the people who had the knowledge, and that's where we learn about things like the Ludwig Black Beauties from the 20s. The Slingerland Radio Kings, the Solid Shell Radio King snares, and all the other wonderful things that went on, the great products that were made by Leedy when George Way was part of that, and all of the various vintage drum companies, Camco, Gretsch, Rogers, Slingerland, Ludwig, Leedy. I mean, there was just tons of information to learn, but nowhere to learn it. I mean, just literally no place to learn it. No books, no internet, nothing. So guys like Charlie were rare in that they had all this knowledge and they were also willing to share the knowledge, which is huge. So for somebody like me, I was just, you know, I was there. I'd lap it all up. I'd take anything, absorb it all, listen to everything, and absolutely loved it. So this was a guy who, you know, over the course of time, people forget, but there really are phases of people that were influential and very instrumental in promoting the world of vintage drums. And Charlie is the first one that comes to mind. There's many more, and I'll talk about the rest of them as well in different episodes. But they're all very influential, each one on his own, and they each deserve some time and attention rather than lumping them all together, because every one of those people made a great contribution, and they were willing to share any of the information they had. And we try to do the same thing now with people. We try to share what we know to pass that legacy on to the next generations of people. So Charlie was a great guy. He had this little shop in Newington, Connecticut. He has a little dumpy place, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was 1,000 square feet at most. But he had some great stuff in there. You'd walk in there and you never knew what you would see. As I say, anything from Black Beauties to Radio King snares, Radio King sets, old Camco, old Gretsch, you name it, you'd spot it there from time to time. One of the things that I remember at different points of time, you know, we've all got stories about the drums we missed, the things that we should have bought that we didn't buy, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember at one time, Charlie had a set. It was a Ludwig set, probably a WFL set, as I recall, because I think it was a 50s set. And this set of drums was just remarkable. It was it's a four-piece kit. And it was a 13, a 16, a 22, and a snare drum, 5.5 or 6.5. I don't remember the size. And it was Bird's Eye Maple. And it was just absolutely stunning, unbelievably gorgeous. Most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Of course, at the time, in 1974, I think it was $550, and it might as well have been $55 million, because I didn't have any money to buy it, being a guy playing on the road, working in a band, and, you know, just married and all that. So, you know, if it had been $5, maybe I could have bought it. But I remember that, and always remember not getting that set. There are always stories and things like that that you have. The thing about Charlie is that he always had great stuff, and as I said, he was always willing to share it. And one of the things that Charlie was responsible for is the original movement of a drum set, a Gladstone, a Billy Gladstone drum set. And I'll tell you a little bit about that story. If you go back to my Gladstone episode on the podcast, it'll talk a little bit about this drum set as well. So I won't get into too many of the details, but Billy made only 4 drum sets in his entire lifetime. One of those was destroyed. One had the bass drum destroyed and the snare went missing. So there were only 2 sets remaining, one of which is in the possession of my good friend and Gretsch, or Gladstone, Gretsch expert, but Gladstone collector, Chet Falzerano. He has the Saul Leslie Vinyl Silver Sparkle Gladstone 4-piece kit. The other kit was a 4-piece kit in white marine pearl that was made for Benny Goodman and used by Maury Feld in Goodman's band. And the snare went missing from that set at one point in time. But eventually, that set came up for sale, and Charlie Donnelly had that set. Charlie Donnelly then also acquired Cozy Cole's original white marine pearl Gladstone snare drum. And back, I think it might have been late 70s, Bunny Carlos, another good friend of mine and a very avid collector, had purchased this Gladstone drum set from Charlie Donnelly. And I think, as Bunny tells the story, I think it was in a trade for a set of Radio Kings or something along those lines. I don't remember the details. But Bunny acquired that set from Charlie Donnelly. At the same point in time, Charlie Donnelly had been the kind of guy who would show up at a concert and bring vintage drums to show to the drummer and say, hey, you ought to get interested in this stuff. This stuff is great. Well, one of the people that he showed up at a concert for was another friend of mine, Carl Palmer, who at the time was playing with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. And Charlie shows up at the sound check and wants to talk to Carl and show him some drums. And Carl is a great guy, so he says, well, okay, you know, and Charlie shows him some drums and shows him a particular snare drum. Carl thought it was kind of cool and bought it for $200. So this kind of gave Carl a little bit of a bug about vintage drums. So down the line, he starts doing a little research. And Carl tells this story when I was at his home a couple of years ago and we were talking about this. He tells the story with great fondness. He says, I pick up the phone and I call Charlie Donnelly and I say, hey, remember me? Carl Palmer, yeah, right, great. He said, hey, I tell you what, I've been doing some research and these Gladstone drum sets, that seems kind of cool. Why don't you just go get me one? Now, Carl is not really realizing at this point in time that there were only 4 drum sets ever made. And at this point in time, there's only 2 in existence. But Carl doesn't know this. So he just tells Charlie, go find me a Gladstone drum set. Like it's, you know, you just pick up the phone and call somebody and get one. Well, at the time, Charlie turns to Carl and he says, well, by circumstance, I just sold a set like that and I sold it to Bunny Carlos. So Charlie was the guy responsible for putting Bunny in touch with Carl Palmer. Bunny eventually sold the set to Carl. And now, of course, this is in and around the time. This is the early 80s, maybe it's around 82. So I had known Charlie in the, met him in 74, and then stayed in touch with him for several years, but I was already out in Chicago by this time. So by the time this transaction took place, I wasn't around the New England area anymore. I was in Chicago. So you fast forward this whole thing through to, you know, now, present time, many, many years later. What is it, 40 years later? Yeah. Basically, a couple of years ago, Carl Palmer and I are sitting down talking, and Carl talks about wanting to broker the Gladstone set. So as it turns out, the guy who was effectively my mentor in the vintage world, who brokered that Gladstone set at one point in time, you know, now I become the person brokering that set at this point in time, which is kind of cool. And just this past year, it was in September of 2013, I did broker the sale of that set for Carl. It has gone into the finest collection in the world, bar none, for drums owned by famous people or highly significant instruments in the drum world. And I know because I managed that collection for the person who has it. So it was things kind of came full circle there, and it was very, very cool to be a part of moving that set again, about 40 years later or close to it, to someone else who's going to love it and appreciate it and, you know, be the caretaker for it for the next generation. So that's a little side story. But anyway, in terms of Charlie Donnelly, what I think is important here is that people remember this is the guy who got most of us started. If you talk to anybody who's a serious vintage guy and who's an older guy like me, I mean, I'm 61 at this point in time. You talk to any of the older guys in this business who have knowledge, deep knowledge of vintage drums, and at some point in time, I'd wager a bet that all of them came in contact with Charlie, got information from Charlie, learned from him, had dealings with him at various points of time, and owe a debt of gratitude to him for all of what he taught us over the years. So, that's my little tribute to Charlie Donnelly. Great guy. He was a good friend, and he had a huge influence on a tremendous number of people. And we all have to keep in mind that what he taught us, we need to pass along to other people and keep that legacy alive and going. So that's our little podcast for today. I hope you enjoyed it. You can always reach me at vintagedrums@aol.com. That's my email. And you can also see everything that we do at maxwelldrums.com. Please give us feedback on these podcasts. Let us know if you like them. Let us know what else you'd like to hear. And we will try to accommodate everybody's requests. That's it for today, December 15th, 2013. Thanks, everybody.